Brighten up your home with help from Menards. Illuminate your home with LED light bulbs from Fight Electric. They provide light that lasts with a rated life of over 10,000 hours. Don't wait to finish your projects. Save big money on Fight Electric LED light bulbs now at Menards. Plus, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now. Save big money
at Menards. Hey, everybody, and welcome back to the SoCap Improv Comedy Podcast. My name is Ralph McLeod. I am the owner and artistic director of the SoCap Improv Comedy Theater in Toronto, Ontario, Canada. We're at 154 Danforth Avenue above the Black Swan Tavern in Toronto, as I mentioned before. We provide improv classes for all levels. And our classes are at least equally geared towards people who do not want to get on stage, do not want to be comedians, but who have heard that improv might help me overcome such things as like my self-consciousness. And that is undeniably true, that it will help people, some people, many people, most people overcome or help to on the journey of overcoming self-consciousness. I like to say, embrace your self-confidence while overcoming your self-consciousness. Get out of your head and get into the moment. That's what I call it. And it's kind of true. Every podcast has a sponsor. And today's sponsor is, this new dessert shop is taking the Toronto by storm. So if you're ever out and about looking for some delicious desserts, don't pass by Custard's Last Stand. That's right, Custard's Last Stand. It's it's a little big place. I make myself laugh, and that's really all I can do. Since I'm sitting in a studio by myself, just make myself laugh. So this podcast is about improvisation. The improv comedy part of it, and how to make it work better for you. What's the benefit of it, especially, or at least as equally as important, if you have no desire to ever get on stage? What is improv gonna do for me? And boy, oh boy, it's like the ocean. The further in you go, the deeper it gets. Just a quote about the Tao. But there is a lot of philosophy and psychology in improv, at least the way I do it and teach it and perform it and practice it. And it has become an integral part of my daily life. In fact, I live my life by the same things that I teach on stage in improv. And I couldn't even begin to count or list the number of ways it's helped me. Well, I've already mentioned too, overcoming my self-consciousness. I hear this thing about imposter syndrome. And if it's what I think it is, the fact that people will catch me as being a fraud in some way, then that's, I for sure had that. Because I was born in a, to say I was born in a small town would be wrong. It's like saying an ant is a small insect or is a small creature. I grew up very remotely away from people. I had my family, and I had a very loving, wonderful family. Although most of my siblings were getting married and moving away, not moving away, but getting married and having their own lives. So even though I had a nice, lovely family for the most part, they were very busy and doing their own things. And so I kind of grew up by myself. So I had big imposter syndrome because I was a hick, you know. I don't want to be insulting to hicks, but I came from a small, very small town. And what I really wanted to be was an intellectual. My dream as a child, or maybe not child, but as a young adult teenager, was that, I would have loved to have parents who were university professors, because I was kind of a big city kid born in a very small, like a farm. I was on a farm outside a remote village, outside a smaller village or larger village, outside a small town. Anyway, yes, so it's made me a better father. Improv has made me a better father, better friend, more attentive. The swings in my emotions are way more calmer. Like I don't have as big ups and as crushing downs. Can't remember the last time I was truly, truly angry. Frustration wise, if it's not in my car, being frustrated at people who block intersections, then it's yeah, most of my frustrations are around driving, and it's just how unsafe and how discourteous people are. But in terms of like talking to people one on one, I can't remember the last time I was very angry or was at a loss for words or felt uncomfortable in situations. And this is all stems from for me from improv and how it has helped me navigate the world and people and myself. Okay, so I want to talk today about why is this boring? That's and I don't want to just say there are only two reasons, but these are the big two. When you're watching scenes on stage or in class, why they're boring, or why you might be involved in a scene and be like, oh boy, this is boring. This is so boring. I want to be anywhere else. And a little sidebar, if you are on stage and at a performance or in a class, and you're thinking that thought of like, oh, this is so boring. Oh my God. Oh, please hurry up and have this end. You can be almost a guarantee that everybody watching you feels the same way. Just please end this. Oh my God. Oh, how much longer is this going to go on? So if you find yourself in that situation, especially in front of a paid audience, change it. There's lots of ways to change it. You want to know some ways? Come and take a class with me. I'll show you some ways to change it. Because your audience will just pull their hair out and they won't come back. So if you're feeling that way, change it. Now, interestingly enough, as this podcast is about also people who do not want to get on stage, that is the same in the real world. If you are at an event, dinner party, whatever, casual place, and you're talking to somebody and you're like, oh my God, I want this conversation to end, you can be almost guaranteed they want the same thing. In fact, one of the ways I know that people like me is I like them. If I'm with somebody and I'm having a good time, I know they're having a good time. I don't even have to question it anymore. And I know if they're not and they're awkward and I'm trying to fake it till I make it, I know they would just really rather we just call the whole thing off and we move on. So it's the same. Like on stage, if you're what you're feeling inside is boredom and nervousness and anxiety, and you want to be anywhere else, the people watching you feel the same way. And that's one of the magical things of improv, of which there are many, but that's one of them. What do audiences really respond to? Well, that's not exactly what I meant to say. I meant to say that your audience will pick up on what you as a performer are feeling, the same way that we can subtly pick up on the way people are feeling in the real world, even if they're trying to fake it. It's very hard to fake enthusiasm when you're not really enthusiastic. It's hard to fake that you like somebody when you don't really like somebody. And while the niceties, social niceties dictate that we do these things sometimes, you're not really fooling too many people, only the people who want to be fooled. Anyway, why is this boring? That's the question I wanted to talk about today. And there are two main reasons why, when we watch improv, it's boring, or when we're with other people in a social setting, it's boring. The first, and well, I'll probably start with the one that's the easiest to probably understand from a drama perspective, or when you're watching improv. One of the first things that's going on is the emotional stakes are not changing. So two characters are basically sitting down talking, but nobody is getting excited or angry or scared or sad or interested, curious or proud. So nothing is happening emotionally to these characters. You see that a lot with just talking head scenes where two people are talking about things, and maybe one character will present an idea of, well, maybe we should do something, to which the other character will very quickly give reasons why it shouldn't happen. In a previous podcast, I think the last one, I mentioned sometimes there are scenes where the suggestion will be skydiving. And so those scenes always start in the airplane, moments away from skydiving, and then the participants will never jump out of the plane. And what they wind up doing is sitting around talking and basically now saying why they have second thoughts or why the other person talked them into it. And even curiously, in those situations where they will express some kind of frustration or anger with the other character or why they talked them into it, they won't follow through on it. They'll just say that and then they'll go back to like, well, I don't know how much longer we can stand here. The plane's gonna land soon. We gotta make a decision. And then they never do. Yes, in those situations, the emotional stakes never change because we're waiting for them to jump out of an airplane and feel some euphoria or fear or something, and they never do. So if you are in a scene and basically you're just sitting around talking and there's no emotional change, it'll be boring. Even if you're not just being boring talking, maybe you are in the middle of a terror, or you're angry, or everything is great. The great one is a little more difficult, but well, not really. In general, no, they're all the same. So even if you have a strong emotional reaction, but it doesn't change, that will still get boring. So whether you have no emotion or a strong one and it doesn't change, those scenes will get boring. And in this situation, I like the analogy of a musical melody that you could have the most beautiful melody in the world, but if it doesn't change, we're going to get bored of it and we're going to walk away and we're going to like, okay, enough, enough, enough. Too much repetition, too much not progressing onto the next thing. We are all hardwired storytellers and we know that there is a point to what we're watching. There is a point where it will move on to something else because we are building towards something. Now, in the real world, conversations just about dry stuff, unless you have a keen interest in the content of that thing, is going to be the same. As an intellectual exercise, it may be good. But when you're just sitting around at like a social function and you're talking to somebody and they're just telling you some dry material, you're gonna get kind of bored. Because the idea at meeting somebody in a social situation is, hey, how do we get along? Are we friends? Or passing the time together? But just dry information is gonna be, so. In those situations, you want to try to engage the emotion of the other character, the other person. And here, the sort of rule of thumb, sorry to use that expression, sort of general principle is to replace your desire to be, to show off or to be impressive with relatability and curiosity. An interest in the other person. Depending on what goal you have, right? Maybe your goal is to get the hell out of there as fast as possible. That's a different thing. But if your goal is to be seen as likable, if you want people to like you, trying to impress them will not work generally. I mean, work is a different situation, but I'm talking about in social situations. But offering people your interest, your curiosity, your support, your listening, your non-judgment, these things will tend to endear those people to you. And the same thing on stage. Replace your desire to say some amazing line that you've just thought up in your head or you've been working on all day trying to start a scene with, and replace that with curiosity, relatability, what and the other character, and build something together. Previously, I've talked about, how invention, what you do as a solo performer in an improv setting is really hard to make that interesting and compelling. But what we can do together, the discovery that we can make together, is often very compelling. And the second thing that will reason that scenes tend to be boring is there's a lack of agreement on what these people are doing. In terms of they're not agreeing their situation, they're not agreeing to who's who. One person might think we're friends, whereas the other actor thinks that these characters are lovers. And that is boring because either A, as a viewer, you don't know what's going on, so it's not for you. So much like hearing the punchline of a joke and not getting it, you kind of tend to walk away because it's not for you. Or they don't know what's going on. You don't know what's going on. And there's no compelling reason to watch because, again, it's not for you. You might be missing something, or they just don't know what's going on. And so there's nothing to relate to. There's no firm foundation from which to build something. There's no point. Another thing that happens, it's a similar thing in here where where in order to try to be funny, actors, improvisers will say things that are completely unrelatable. Like, wow, you've got 38 kids. And you hear that and you just go like, what? No, you don't. People don't have 38 children. I mean, yes, it has happened. It can happen. And if you do say that in the scene, if you open your mouth and you say, oh yeah, I get lost, like 38. Well, everybody's hanging on the justification. What would come next would be the synthesis line that would make that make sense and make that relatable and might get a chuckle out of me if you can tell me why a character has 38 children. Without being without being insulting to certain religions or certain people, even the religions that you can't make fun of. Not in my class, we don't make fun of anybody. You don't mock anybody. It's a pretty good rule. Had a discussion in my class just a few days ago about mocking lawyers. I'm like, well, why? Why is that okay? Because they make more money than you do, because you've had a bad interaction with a lawyer, or just because of the general zeitgeist of lawyers are all crooks and all that stuff. Well, again, if you're doing this in front of an audience and you think that's okay, anybody in your audience who's a lawyer will hate you. Meanwhile, if you say something nice about lawyers, they will love you. And what do you want at the end of the day? Do you want to be loved or what? I don't know. That's up to you. That's a different thing. Anyway, but for now, that's what's going on. So either scenes are boring. There's two things tend to be going on. Number one, the emotional stakes aren't changing. And that usually manifests by people just sitting around chatting. And every time they suggest some kind of mode of action or do something, the other person stops it, and we're just back to talking. And the other one that tends to happen a lot is this is when you get the two characters are in conflict with each other. My movie loves you best. No, she didn't. She loved us both equally. Well, what are you talking about? My experience, she was always doting on you. Well, that's not what I saw. I saw this. That's a conflict between the characters. And without any kind of coming to a conclusion as to who is right, we're fighting over details, the emotional stakes don't change, and that's also a very boring scene. And that tends to happen quite a bit with conflict when the conflict exists between the two characters or three characters, but when it's that kind of conflict and nothing tends to happen, and those scenes usually end with eventually one character capitulating, but by then everybody's asleep. And it's too late. So this is why we say yes. One reason we say yes. And so that's the one reason emotional stakes don't change. And the second reason is that there's no agreement and nobody knows what's going on. Or people are making, again, the agreement side of that is bizarre offers that make no sense. Like this is one I like to point out that was actually said in my class once where one character walked in, looked at the other one, and just out of the blue said, "Why are you eating your pants?" Nobody laughed, as you would expect. But boy, oh boy, that sounds like it would be funny, doesn't it? No, it doesn't. And it's not funny. It's just bizarre without a lot of justification. So the corollary to that is you can definitely start a scene like that, but be prepared to justify it and make it relatable and make it understandable so that people will laugh at it. And why are you eating your pants? Times are tough. Oh, he's so broke, he has to eat his pants. See, it works. But it's not like never do these things. That's why I don't have rules. But it depends on what you want to do, and do you want to be nice to your scene partners, or do you want to be mean to them? Do you want people to want to play with you or not? Anyway, I'm getting beyond the scope of this one podcast, which is, hey, emotional stakes. So have your emotional stakes change. If you're bored, cry, laugh, scream. There's a story, I don't know if it's apocryphal, about the late, great Alan Arkin, who recently passed away, who would, when he was bored, would walk up to his scene partner, touch his forehead with his own forehead, and scream at him, "You're driving me crazy." Now, I'm not advocating you do that, but the "you're driving me crazy" part, yes, that, or cry or laugh. And the second one is, we're on different pages, so you always got to be on the same page. Again, if I have one rule about improv, and I'm not sure I do, but I think if I did have a rule, it'd be this one: the performers have to agree on what's going on. And if they don't, it's not going to work. Unless it might work in spite of itself. We might laugh at you, but it's hard to laugh with you when you don't know what's going on. We might laugh at the train wreck that is your scene, or that is your story of the real world. Anyway. That's my time for today. Thanks, everybody. Hope to see you all back here again next time for more SoCap Improv Comedy Podcast. And don't forget, go check out Custard's Last Stand for all your custard needs. Ciao.